So, let's see. Do you believe that God is and is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him? This is the writer to the Hebrews says. Is that how it works? Let's kick off. Jill.
Yes, and yes. yes, God does reward those who diligently seek him, definitely. But I also think that God helps us to diligently seek him.
Okay.
Because it says so often, in Paul in particular, says so often that, you know, we're dead in our trespasses and sins. We're not able to instigate this pilgrimage. But God comes and enables us. So I think there's that side to it as well.
Okay. So who initiates this? Do we have to initiate this? Do we seek God and God trusts us entirely to do it, or is this a gift of God's?
I've been involved in many, many arguments about predestination and free will, and I think the most helpful illustration I've ever come across is that we see a gate, we see the narrow gate, and on it is written, "Seek me." Seek him, seek him. We go through it. We close the gate behind us, and it says on the back, "I have sought you."
Mm.
We think we're seeking God, but actually when we look back, he has sought us. I think almost everybody, if anyone here who gave their testimony, would say, you know, yes, I did this, I did that, maybe, all the rest of it, but circumstances were such that I went seeking, I was introduced to this person, I found this, and that's how I came to the Lord.
Mm. Okay.
Well, I don't want to start a great
argument about
so I'll leave it there.
Okay. What did the nickel say?
I like the word woo. I think God woos us. I don't think he tramples on our free will, but I think he woos us. And that's in all sorts of ways, but I think he wants to speak to us, and he loves it when we choose to listen. I think I can only speak personally. I'm not someone who often has great theophanies of God speaking to me. It's happened once or twice, not great theophanies, but very clear moments when I've not been in any doubt that that was God's voice. And I wonder sometimes, for many of us, whether there is too big an issue about the natural and the supernatural. So, what is a word of knowledge? Or what is a word of wisdom? You know, is it prefaced in our mind by, "Thus says the Lord"? Sometimes is it dressed up actually as, "Hey, that's a really good idea." You know, I don't know where it came from, but it's a really good idea. And I think sometimes that the godly walk that is in a place where God can speak to you is full of that stuff, actually, without it necessarily being, as I say, prefaced by kaboom. So that's not. But I do also believe that there are times when actually we do earnestly seek him, if you like. "God, I need an answer." Never comes when you, well, never, my experience, it never comes actually at the moment when you say, one of the funniest things in, you know, the biggest moments in my life was sort of 20 years ago or so, when I wanted a decision on a big issue, and we were actually at New Wine, and this was Jenny and I were there. And you know, you go to these meetings, and there's lots of lovely singing, and powerful speakers, and times of ministry. Where did I hear God speak? It was at about 5 to 1, standing out the outside the women's toilets, waiting for her in there, wondering why it is that women always take longer than men in the loo. And I knew.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. I'm just thinking about that. I mean, these passages I've picked out, but there's a fair bit of God taking initiative in this, actually. And sometimes it's quite specific. Moses, I'd like you to come up the mountain, please. But some of it's very general. God is a general, this is the place to come. You know, Elijah's got a reputation. The temple's got a reputation. Jeremiah's got a reputation. Jesus has got a reputation.
So Naaman had the right servant girl.
Oh, yes, it was the servant girl.
So again, looking back, there was a coincidence that was definitely a God incident.
Yeah. But it's just sort of, God almost throws it out there to create the reputation, and people are free to respond to it. But there is a bit of initiative, framework. Interesting. Kathy?
Yes, I was, and I agree with all of that. I was thinking of another perspective where it seems that God doesn't reward the seeker after him. And not necessarily brought out here, but when it seems very dark, whatever the dark night of the soul is that the mystics would grapple with, or the cloud of unknowing, or this desire for God, and yet where is God's answer, where is the beat of God's heart? You know, what, my God, why have you forsaken me? You know, it's that kind of cry. It's the lamentations cry. The lament of the Psalms. And I wonder whether there is that whole aspect of darkness and the silence of heaven that we can also experience. But it is not... Again, it's the hindsight of Jill and what we read in the scriptures. It's not the absence of God, but it's his presence in another way. Mm. And it's how we learn to sort of see in the dark, and in the darkness where God is. The portion in Isaiah 45, I will give you the treasures of darkness, riches stored in secret places, that you may know that I am the Lord your God. Through a message to Isaiah, that but sometimes the way can be. I think I'm fine now. I've had my cough. Thank you. I wonder if it's that there is that part of God. You know, your face, Lord, I seek. As the deer pants for the water, so my face longs, I seek you, your face, Lord, or why does my heart, you know, all of the psalmists wrestling, they can't seem to get an answer, God. And yet, I'm sure that is, you know, within the love of God, it is that deeper, see, it's taking us to a deeper level. It's the God who is in the absences, the God who is has to be waited for, the God who sometimes appears to hide his face. It's that that unknowing bit, okay. I think, that okay. I mentioned earlier. And I think there is that in the scriptures, in the Christian tradition, of the prayer tradition, that we have to be aware of, and it doesn't mean God's displeasure or that God isn't there. It's simply another aspect of the nature of God. Perhaps it's part of His holiness, that we, you know, dare we come close to that holiness. Okay. But
so Jesus said, "Seek and you will find."
Yes.
So I go seeking, and I don't find today.
Yeah.
And therefore, I'm thinking, well, that must be God's not happy with me.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there may be more to it.
Well, it's the persistent widow.
Seeking, you'll find. Maybe not straight away.
Like if the judge wakes up when the woman keeps asking for bread, you know, isn't God even more? You know, it's the persistence.
Yeah.
Are we really going to keep going in the dark? And it's that when you use a different kind of sat nav, isn't it? Is that you're not going on what you see or what you hear, you're going on the truths that have been the bedrock of your formation. You know God said this, and I believe that this is the values of the Christian life. I just have to keep on walking in that way, because I don't actually have any other road signs at the moment. But that takes us to, I think, a deeper level with God of trust. But that would sit alongside what has already been said.
Okay. So it's sort of a caveat, isn't it? It's just, let's be aware of this. It's an important thing to say
when we're exploring this terrain. There are other perspectives within the Christian tradition.
And yet, when we read that stuff in Matthew 6, Jesus is, he's labouring that point. Ask, knock, seek.
Yes.
Yeah, again, come on. Why is that? Why does he have to labour that point so much? Is it because we give up easily, or because we encounter some of this and it... there's a disincentive, and was it because we're not inclined to seek after God, to make Him our first port of call? We're more inclined to go it alone. What's it about? Why is He so insistent on this?
I think in one of the contexts, I'd have to look it up, but one of the contexts of that seeking, is it not the story of going to the friend? And the friend, you go to a friend at midnight, and the friend gives you bread, and also the saying about if you, who are evil, know how to give your children good gifts, you don't give them a scorpion, etc., etc. So is it also not this Jesus trying to drum home that God is Father, God is a loving God, not someone to be feared? Was he trying to tell his audience, who had this picture of God, as many people do today, of someone who you've got to be frightened of? He wouldn't give you, it's no use asking him, he wouldn't give me anything. Either I'm too insignificant, or he is not someone who gives. He's a tyrant. So, if I remember rightly, quite a lot of the context of that seeking is Jesus also saying, look, God's like a friend. God's like the person who gives the bread, not the scorpion, and so on.
Which makes sense of the lost son parable, isn't it? Where he's very much doubting, is the father, I'm going to have to rationalise this, I can't just rely on his love.
I was going to say a similar sort of thing. I think the context for me is of the Pharisees and the whole rigmarole of Judaism. And Jesus is saying, no, it's not like that. Ask, seek, knock, and you will be given, heard, answered, rewarded. And it's not that you have to jump through 43 different legalistic hoops. Or even worse than that, you wonder whether the Pharisees are ever actually much bothered whether God heard them. The end was in the means, if you like. It was the rigmarole that was important, and doing the stuff and the self-importance that came from it. Jesus is saying, no.
So they're saying their prayers in public on the streets. Exactly. Seen, they've got their
and that is the immediate preceding section.
Yeah. Mm.
So there really is somebody there that hears you.
Yeah. Wow. Which is, so actually the whole thing is, look, God is there.
Don't worry about this other stuff. Just get in close with him.
Yeah.
Is it that? Again, bringing us back to the relationship, to living out of the heart and as we journey through life.
And also there is, you know, in the seeking, even in the seeking in the darkness, it's about knowing the cost of what you're seeking. Someone said, you know, you make two decisions in life that you know nothing about. One is becoming a Christian and the other is getting married. You know, you make a big decision knowing nothing of what's going to follow. You don't really know what the outcome is going to be.
Yeah.
Jesus is talking about building the tower. You know, if you put someone's building a tower, they weigh up the cost. I wonder if there's a time when he's saying, you know, do you really want this? Do you know what this is really going to be about?
Mm.
Because this is costly stuff. You know, this is the sacrifice of my son. You are living sacrifices to take. I don't know, Paul's word, but and even in the darkness, are you still going to knock to find out? Because it's going to be like this sometimes.
Yeah.
And I want to know that's okay.
Yeah.
Because if we're going to do business together on this quest, I've got to know you're up for. I've got to know you're up for it.
Yeah.
So
interesting. Yeah. Do you think there are levels of seeking like that? Is that what is Jesus sort of saying? Well, ask and you'll see. But then, yeah, if that doesn't work, try seeking. Try actually hunting around a little bit. Go here. Go there. See if you'll find. And if that isn't working, then maybe hammer.
It's not just knocking; it's hammering.
Do something more. Is there something in that as well? Yeah. I mean, it's a question.
I mean, another. Perhaps if I don't use hearing, I can use seeing more effectively. Is one of my stories of seeking is Mary, John 20, Mary, Mary, John, and Peter going to the tomb after Jesus' death, and he's been put in the tomb, and you know the fellows run ahead and look in, and they see. Their word "see" is used very often by John. They go in and they see the grave clothes, and then they go in and they see the stones being moved away, see the grave clothes, and then later on. You know, they go away, and then Mary has this encounter with the gardener, who is Jesus. And she goes back after that encounter and tells this, I have seen the Lord. Now, in Greek, all of those words "see" are different. One of the words "see" is "I observed." And another "see" is "I have the faculty of sight of." But when Mary says, "I have seen the Lord," it's a completely other word. Orao in Greek. It's the word meaning I have experienced an encounter with God.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes language, and you're much more of a scholar than I am, but a biblical languages scholar than I am, as well as other ways. But in that way, for me, there's something about seeing at different levels. And Peter saw one way, John saw another, Mary said she saw in another way. And the way the writer John tries to express this different level of seeing is using different words that don't exist, well, exist in our language, but we have to use a phrase to describe.
Yeah, it's a bit more clumsy, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I'm just translating that to the hearing. I wonder if it's the same. You know, there's different ways of hearing, different ways of seeking, there's different ways of encountering God. And that comes on the journey of discipleship. You know, sometimes we just have the faculty of sight and see something, we're looking at something intently, we observe it. Our attention is drawn. But sometimes we see, as in, the fullness of God is somehow revealed to us in something that happens.
Mm.
And it's so overwhelming. It's not just an incident, it's a God incident. Mm. You know, it's a theophany. And that's a different way of seeing.
Wow, I like it.
So how do we seek like Mary sought? You know, she stayed behind. She went up, followed the lads, and looked in as well. But she knew there was something more, and she just waited around in the darkness, saying that, my God, you know, there must be something more than this, or else my life, what's my life about? And then out of that place, she heard that voice, and Jesus called her.
Yeah.
Out of that darkness, he came. And she was just overwhelmed because she had had this amazing encounter and she saw the fullness of the glory of God in the risen Christ.
Yeah.
And that was her journey.
Yeah.
And she could then go back. But she had to go quite deep before she had that encounter. But she was the first apostle. She was the first person to tell the good news of Christ.
Yeah. Yeah.
Resurrected and raised from the dead.
Yeah.
And she had the power to do it because she'd encountered Jesus.
I like
it. So it's that kind of...
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if that...
So how do we do it? I mean, how do we go about this? And perhaps maybe we need to be drawing in, what does this mean for us? We've been on quite a journey to here. It's involved all kinds of things. But now we're where we are, I think we all want to seek God, don't we? I mean, don't we want to move closer to God in some way, whatever that means, to see more of him, to have that seeing where we're really finding. What is it we can glean from this or from other parts? What helps us to really do that? In our context,
I mean, this is a sort of scattergun, really. First of all, I mean, again, I think in my experience, different people have different ministries, and there are people who are deeply contemplative and spend a lot of time listening to God, and that is a precious resource. There are others who are perhaps more matter-of-fact about it, who nevertheless, you know, this lovely phrase, walk in the Spirit. Well, walking is something that you do actually incredibly naturally, isn't it? You know, I don't think about placing one foot in front of the other. I just kind of do it. But I think actually there is a listening to God involved in that. I think that... You know, this sort of retrospective thing can be quite important in terms of journaling. Certain times in my life I found that very helpful, both because it forces me to reflect about what's happened today, if you like, or, you know, where my thoughts have gone. But also when you go back over that, you sometimes see patterns that you don't see in the single incidences. And perhaps one other thought, I can remember reading a book, some of you may have read it as well, I think it was Luis Palau, South American preacher, and he told the story of preaching the same sermon to his congregation 10 weeks running, or whatever it was. And on the 11th week when he started, somebody said, hang on a minute, you've already preached that 10 times, why are you going to preach it 11th time? And he said, well, when you start doing it, I'll stop preaching it. It's obvious, really, isn't it? But I wonder whether there's a sense whether God says, well, actually, I don't think you're going to take any notice. So am I going to speak? So I think actually being obedient to what we think God is saying is quite important, because, you know, you move on in faith. And then maybe then God is ready to say something else. But there isn't any point until you... And sometimes that obedience is a bit scary, because it's, you know, you're sometimes clutching at straws or... But I think, as Kathy says, there's an awful lot there which is revealed truth, which is our anchor in Scripture and the tradition. And it's not scary to move on that.
But sometimes in our own context, we need something a bit more.
Yeah.
And you reminded me of what John Eldridge says, another John Eldridge thing, where he says it's really important to ask the next question. When you're seeking God, maybe you hear something from him, or or find something from him, and then your temptation is, oh, I've got that bit, great, I'll get on with it. Mm-hmm. When actually what you need to do is submit that back to God and say, okay, how do I handle this? What do I do next? What do I do with this? This is revealing, and now what? And coming back to ask the next question to go deeper, rather than just doing that, just keeping God involved,
yes,
keeping
that obedience, yes.
Keeping on seeking, it's yes. Keeping going.